climate change, a virus, nuclear war, maybe an asteroid. However the apocalypse arrives, I have a question. For those of us left, what the heck are we going to eat? And once we've finished all the canned goods. Okay, I'm joking. But seriously, if everything green and growing is at some point decimated by some kind of apocalypse, how are we going to replant anything? I mean, there's a lot of stuff we can live without, apples, oranges, but corn, wheat, rice, they're pretty much essential. Well, lucky for us, somebody else had that thought too. Back in the 1990s, his name is Cary Fowler. He's an agriculturalist and the founder of the Svalbard Global Seed Bank, otherwise known as the Doomsday Vault, which can be found 400 feet deep in rock on a desolate island in Norway above the Arctic Circle. That's where they're storing the world's seeds. Charles Monroe Kane sat down with Cary Fowler and was like, this is crazy.
It was a pretty crazy idea.
I'm just visualizing here either the conversation with your partner or conversation with your first meeting at the UN or the Bill Gates Foundation, and you're like, hey, this is what I want to do. Did you think maybe for a moment it was a little too crazy?
To be honest, in the beginning, I didn't think the right people or enough people would take it very seriously. But I tried to make a pretty strong, rational, logical argument for it. And somewhat to my surprise, people seemed to pay attention and they seemed to go with it.
Well, clearly you did. I mean, you have seeds from North Korea. You've gotten seeds from every country in the world?
Just about. I think the number is up to 234 now in terms of numbers of countries.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that includes some countries that no longer exist, by the way. So.
Wow. I guess you can just keep the seeds, I guess.
Yeah.
I want a little journey with you for a second. You get off the snowmobile in front of the seed vault. People can't see you. What does it look? What do they see? Do they walk downstairs? Is there an elevator? Mm-hmm. What does it physically look like, the building and that's the entrance to the tunnel? Can you take us there?
Sure. Well, it's like a concrete wedge that's sticking out of the side of the mountain. There's a simple metal door there. The Norwegians paid for the facility, paid the cost for it entirely, and under Norwegian law, you have to have some artwork associated with anything that costs that much. It's a beautiful kind of light, artistic lighting feature at the top of the wedge.
It's like a dark blue. It's like a shiny dark blue, right?
Yeah, the artist was fantastic. She said that in the summertime, when you have daylight all 24 hours, you should see your reflection in it, and it should reflect your responsibility.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. You know, oh my God, everything about the sea vault makes me happy.
Yeah, it reflects your responsibility to preserve this natural resource. And in the wintertime, it glows. And as she put it, it's a beacon to mankind.
There's very little sticking out of the ground. It's pretty small that goes into this big, huge tunnel. When I first saw it, it really reminded me of the monolith in 2001, A Space Odyssey. Immediately, that's what it reminded me of. And I was like, okay, that's iconic. Then I thought, it's kind of scary, or at least surreal. Is it any of those things, iconic, scary, or surreal?
It's a couple of them.
Okay.
I don't think it's
scary.
Tell me
which ones. Yeah.
It's interesting because it's on a Norwegian postage stamp now, and everybody in Norway would recognize the structure, even though very few people, Norwegians or otherwise, have ever seen it. And the Norwegian government tells me that it's the second most recognized structure in Norway.
Wow, but
even though most
people
haven't
seen it, right?
Yeah. Once you get down there and you enter a room, you know, I've taken a few people into the room with the seeds, and they've never failed to exit that room with anything other than, I think, an overwhelming amount of emotion. Because when you're in the room with seeds, and we have samples of nearly 1 million different crop varieties.
Wow.
You know, you're in a room with the biggest collection of living biodiversity in the world. So all of these varieties that we have in the seed vault, they are the representation of a 12, 13,000 year history of agriculture on this planet and all of our ancestors. When you think about it, that's a humbling and emotional experience.
I think it's also emotional because one of the reasons you're preserving it is that we may have problems ahead.
Well, exactly. This is a living library of agriculture. And I like to think of it as a kind of like an artist's palette. let's say in the seed vault, we have 150-something thousand different varieties of wheat and about the same number of rice.
Wow, geez.
And this represents sort of all the colors of the rainbow. So like an artist's palette, it represents what farmers and plant breeders will be able to have in the future for rice and wheat and all the other crops. And if you begin to lose that diversity, if one of those varieties becomes extinct, for example, and you lose those traits that it contains, then you've sort of taken a color off of the artist's palette.
Gosh, this is biblical. You know, I'm picturing Noah with some grains on the boat. Like, I've never heard anything like this before. Does anything else like that even exist or have ever existed on this level of what you're doing?
Not that I know of. I guess there are a lot of different conservation initiatives to conserve a lot of different things, but we designed that facility to last probably longer than any structure that's been built on Earth during my lifetime. And it required the cooperation of a lot of different countries. So it's something that's more or less permanent, or at least it's long-term, and it's for the future, and it's positive. But at the same time, it's a pretty simple idea. This is not really big, high technology, or even very costly, frankly. It's a pretty cheap place to run. It's an insurance policy for agriculture and food security, but that insurance policy probably costs less than the insurance that a major art museum would pay for every year.
And I read you don't even have an employee in there, right? There's not like a watchman or something, right? It's just...
No, it's...
It's empty. There's nobody works there.
That's right. Well, it would be kind of an unfortunate job to have.
Yeah, sounds like a terrible job.
It'd be interesting on the first day, but after that, it would get cold and old.
I have a final question for you, and I don't mean it to be cynical. I'm asking it sincerely. Why should we care?
This diversity is the biological foundation for agriculture. And my definition of extinction is not that a species is extinct when the last individual dies. My definition is that a species is extinct when it no longer has the ability to evolve, because then we're just waiting for the last one to die. And that definition applies not just to the California condor, it applies to wheat and rice. Wheat and rice need to be able to adapt. They need to be able to evolve. Nothing is standing still in the world, and they can't either and survive. So this is the raw material for that evolution. Without this diversity, there is no evolution, and there's no wheat and rice, and there's no food security for human beings. So that's why it's important.
Carrie Fowler is the creator of the Svalbard Global Seed Bank. Charles Monroe Kane was talking with him. These days, Carrie is retired to the Hudson Valley of New York, where he tends an orchard of more than 100 apple varieties. He also keeps a small herd of rare pole cattle and an even rarer flock of Buckeye chickens.